And I started to work up how I could get television programs about science onto the air, which was not an easy thing to do. The ABC was very lean at those days, black and white television, of course, and they were lean as far as its capacity to produce in-house productions of programs. News, yes. Current Affairs came along with the This Day Tonight program, which was live presented. There wasn't very much more. Now, in order to get, and you might wonder where this is leading, but it really comes into all of the Apollo stuff, is that I generated a couple of ideas which were to do with astronomy, which was one of the few big sciences in Australia, which you could really say astronomy was internationally renowned to have a very strong Australian component. Astronomy was really going big time with the Parkes Radio Telescope, which was opened, I think, in 1961, the big 210-footer, they used to call it, dish at Parkes, and became an icon of Australian science. At the same time, the optical astronomers were building new telescopes up at Siding Spring Mountain out of Coonabarabran in New South Wales. The ANU had, Australian National University that is, had a couple of really excellent telescopes. They're bought off the shelf from overseas. They weren't built in Australia, but they were bought with a view to Australian conditions and were becoming amongst the most powerful telescopes of their time in the Southern Hemisphere. Very important, Southern Hemisphere observing, very important because we look straight into the Milky Way. Much better viewing, much more capacity to understand what's going on in the universe if you could look in right into the Milky Way from the Southern Hemisphere, which wasn't nowhere near as accessible from the Northern Hemisphere, where it was right down on the horizon. I reckoned that astronomy was going to be the best subject for television. But then there's the trouble with facilities. These were way out from Sydney or anywhere, a long way away. How could we actually make television programs and get them onto the air? And it turned out that the experience of the British was very relevant here, because part of their production methods was that they used outside broadcast cameras, the ones that are used, were used mainly in those days for sport and for religion broadcasts. And the ABC had in every capital city an OB van, great big truck, crammed full of equipment, four cameras, and the whole crew didn't get into the truck. They went in associated vehicles and would trundle out to the sporting field or the church or whatever and set up. And they would be able to get live television pictures, which they could then beam back by microwave link back to the main studio and transmitter, which in Sydney was at Gore Hill, for example. So there was a lot of experience with these OB vans doing this sort of thing. And I discovered that I couldn't get funding from within the ABC to film, get a film crew to go to these places. Very expensive. You had to pay for it out of a budget which was virtually non-existent for this purpose. But you could get, if you could do it in between sport and religion, if you could get the outside broadcast van to the location and get it back for the next Saturday's sport, you could have it for free. That is, it was expensive enough, but it was what was called below the line budget.
Okay.
Because the cost of all of that was covered. Anything above the line was not covered and had to come out of your own budget, which was minuscule and inconsequential for this purpose. So I devised two programs. about astronomy, which involved going out onto the locations. The two that I mentioned were Parkes radio telescope and Siding Spring for the optical telescopes. And we trundled out to these with the outside broadcast vans and disposed our very bulky cameras around the venues and shot as if live a program about astronomy, about the telescopes, with people doing the work, and with me sort of off camera doing interviews and so on, and, you know, continuity linking them together. The thing about this was there was no portable videotapes in those days. The only way it could be recorded was to get it back to Sydney. The signal had to get back to Sydney on microwave. And you can't get line of sight, for example, from Siding Spring to Sydney without bouncing it several times. Yes. On loops, on links. Maybe I think there were probably about four links. Mm-hmm. Set up on mountains. One would receive facing north, and then next to it was a dish facing south, which beamed it down to the next one facing north, and so eventually it would get down to the videotape room in Gore Hill in Sydney, and that press record button. We wouldn't see the jolly thing as it was finally getting through as to what the quality was and so on. We could see the picture as we were sending it, but we didn't have control over all of those imponderables like, you know, sheer quality degradation with the distance that it was being travelled and the number of hops that there were in the microwave length. But nonetheless, this was what was called a built OB. We made the programs by building sequences which were videotaped and then butt edited together, and then the titles and music and commentary was added in an editing suite, and out they went.
And that was called The Astronomers?
The Astronomers of Siding Spring and The Astronomers of Parkes were the two. They were broadcast on successive weeks in November 1966. Now, those dates are significant because they overlap with the space things which I've been talking about.
Yes.
Right? The Parkes one was the second one, and we'd learned quite a bit, and it was better in many ways than the Siding Spring one. If you look at them now, you see them as being very slow. They're black and white, of course. The pictures are a little bit fuzzy. The whole sort of tone of it, of the programs, were fairly didactic. There's a sort of element of, you know, teaching, if you like, in a kind of way about astronomy associated with them in terms of style. And there was sort of nothing tricksy about them at all. In today's terms, it was slow. There's no sort of slick editing. There's no animation brought in. None of the sorts of things which make the television programs about science at the moment so absolutely flat out and jumpy and cramming everything into every second you possibly can get. But nonetheless, they worked, and they went over really quite well.
And these were 30-minute programs?
No, they went to 50 minutes.
50 minutes.
Yeah. The one which was the better of the two was necessarily the second, and it had the more spectacular pictures too, and that was the one from Parkes. The Astronomers of Parkes ended with a sequence in which we actually trained the telescope, which you could do in daylight, of course. It doesn't have to be at night time like you have with the opticals. Trained the telescope on a quasar. These were the gun objects of the time, the amazing quasi-stellar objects, which were so powerful in their radio waves that they punched through from much further away than anything else which was known to humankind.
They were very mysterious then too, weren't they? Nobody knew what they were.
That's right, that's why they call them quasi-stellar objects. They turned out to be just enormously powerful galaxies which emitted in the radio wavelengths, so the result of this was that Parkes was setting, if you like, the distance record for observations of the universe. The further We could honestly say that the quasar which we observed in that program, 3C273, it was called by its catalogue name, was the most distant object known to humankind. So there's a degree of drama about that, and we can actually track across the sky with the telescope, and with John Bolton, who was the director of the radio telescope at Parkes, giving a commentary, and we could see the trace of the signal and the hiss of the signal ascending and descending as it tracked across this object. So it was quite, it had a bit of drama associated with it. Now, all of these sorts of things were sort of rushing around in my sort of professional life, all at the same time, when the BBC contacted the ABC and said, look, we have worked out that there will be a satellite across the Pacific in 1967, which will complete a circle, a potential circling of the globe. And we are intent on making a program to mark this occasion, which completely circles the globe with live television programs or segments, building into a major, major show, all live as it happens, on the whatever date it was going to be, and they set a date for it, and they combined it with all of the other European broadcasting organisations that they were then called. There was a kind of consortium of European public service broadcasters there, and the Russians, and the Americans, the Canadians, but to make it work, to genuinely say we are going to have a global live television program, we must have Australia. The BBC and the people who were leading this were my old mates Aubrey Singer and Noble Wilson, who I knew. But there was a catch. And the catch was that since it was being sponsored by the European Broadcasting Union, EBU and the BBC and so on, it had to be on in prime viewing time in their time zone.
Yes.
And what did that mean for Australia? It meant that it would be on, and they were pitching for a two-hour program between 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. in the midwinter. And they said, what can you guys offer in the way of interesting program items?
At 5 o'clock in the morning.
At 5 o'clock in the midwinter's morning. Now, they hadn't approached me directly at all. This was all done very officially, the kind of quasi-diplomatic way in which the ABC and the BBC dealt with each other, as both as national broadcasters and sort of had that kind of status. And so it came from the top down. But the program managers were scratching their heads and saying, what on earth can we do at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., 7 a.m. in the morning? Oh, God, oh, what can we do? And so they sent out a circular email, memo, they didn't have email those days, memo, and they were on coloured paper, and said, if you've got any ideas, let us have them. Well, I immediately said, right, I know what we'll do. We have just produced this program from Parkes. We know we can, there's a great story associated with it. We know that we can actually deliver viable pictures and a story in 5 minutes from Parkes back to Sydney, which can then link into the satellite over the Pacific and be part of the first global network. And the key was the radio telescope at Parkes observing the most distant object known to humankind. And it could be done within that time frame, and we knew that we could do it. We'd demonstrated it. We demonstrated that we could beat the technical problems of getting it from Parkes to Sydney and the positioning of the cameras in the telescope and all the rest of that stuff. So we'd got ourselves really to well past first base. And that really interested the program managers. And then the BBC people, Singer and Wilson, said, well, okay, if we do that, we'll have room for another one, another segment. What else can you show?